This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rock Holder once again with you, joined by probably second in Talking Split caps, Zoe Carr. Like, done well over the years, but joined by a newbie on the podcast today for her first episode, Jenna Rowe. Hey, welcome.
Thanks for the invite.
Always a pleasure. So, joined the Vic Metro ranks again, I suppose, as a coach, been through as a player and back in the coaching landscape. You've been here two-ish months now, I want to say off the top of me, maybe three. Maybe I've undersold you here.
Started in July.
Okay, a lot
does
longer than I thought.
Does it feel like a year and a half?
Yeah.
Sure does. Yeah. Steep learning curve.
It has been. What are your sort of first impressions jumping back into it? Like, you know, from a very different landscape, obviously, from the playing when you went through it was obviously a while ago, not to age you too heavily, but it's obviously a very different space now than what it was. Like, what are your first impressions of it?
There's a lot of acronyms.
Oh, yeah. Bang on. Bang on. Hanging out with besties too long, haven't you?
The first couple of weeks, I was like, whoa, what does that mean? We need to like actually speak everything, not just acronyms, but I think I've got my head around them all now.
Excellent. Enjoying the role? Enjoying coaching the kids?
Loving it. The girls are just a joy to be around and I'm really enjoying coaching them.
Awesome. Fantastic. So we'll talk a little bit about exactly that. NPP camp over the weekend, so National Performance Program, was on over the weekend. Zoe, give us your sort of rundown of what camp was, how it went, what were the things that were good, what are the things you need to work on coming out of it, those types of things.
Well, that's loaded. There's a lot in there. How long have we got?
Well, usually about 50-odd minutes, it turns out, but we'll see how we go.
Amazing. Amazing 2 days. We had all the country and metro kids together at Xavier College, which was an incredible venue for us because we were able to have the two courts and then the little indoor cricket that's attached to that. So we were able to use that for workshops or warm up or cool down. And it was just amazing. 6 sessions on court, journaling workshops, S&C workshops. Darren McGuinness from Core Advantage came down and was able to put them through their recovery and their warm up, but also then give a bit of a rundown and a workshop on how important it is to be able to move and to take care of your body. And actually, I was in Ballarat last night and had one of the athletes that was there say, oh, now that I roll properly, I'm actually not that sore. so it was good. We got something out of it. It was great. But it was great to just be able to have those athletes together and going up against each other and, you know, learning and the coaches that had given up their time as well to come in and help them was huge. I think we all sort of walked away from it all better. All of us walked away better, which is obviously the idea. From a what do we need to do better, from an on-court perspective, our end of penetration passing is quite poor. The idea is right, so we've worked on the decision making, and they're making the right decisions. Now it's about the execution and being able to you know, let the decision not be dictated by the skill set. So, you know, have it that they can, you know, and we've got to get a bit funky with it. Sometimes that pass might need to be behind the back or behind the head or outside of the body or those sort of things, and we're not going to get better at them unless we let them do it. So, which is hard to see sometimes. It's, you know, when you want something, especially if you're a traditional fundamental coach, when you see that sort of stuff and it doesn't work, it can, you know, send you a bit loco, and I understand that because that used to be me.
Well, it's coaching in general. Like, how many times have we seen someone take a shot and it's like, that's ridiculous, you shouldn't shoot that, it goes in, and it's like, oh, well, it's all absolved. it's that kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you know, we're happy because it went in and we won't really discuss it, but it's like, no, a bad shot's still a bad shot. A good pass is still a good pass. The execution may not always be there. That's a different problem altogether, but the ability to actually see the pass,
yeah,
that's not easy, I think, for a lot of our younger kids in particular who are probably, I don't want to say they're robotic in how they play, but I think a lot of associations out there have a style of play for their association, and it's like, hey, this has to be that to that to that to that. We're trying to take them out of that, that sort of scaffolding, like we were talking about it the other day. It's like we want our kids to be USBs. Like, they can just plug and play straight away without having to learn this system to this system to this system, and that has to happen. It's like, no, we want them to be fairly universal, I think, in that space.
I think we had a bit of that in when we're in our transition portions of our both offense and defense, but mostly offense. There was a lot of trying to walk the ball up the floor and get into an offense. And that is a bit of a trait of female athletes too, because they want to do what they're told. So if you've got an offense, they want to run it because you've given me this offense and that's, you know, I'm going to be compliant. And we're trying to, like you said, we're trying to break them out of that, play in our pace phase in the first 8 seconds, put heat on the rim, and then just ball out a little bit and see what you can do and what you can create. And it was good. Another thing that we definitely need to work on is our free throw shooting. So we had some segments where we had some pressure free throws and it did not go well. So I was in Ballarat last night, and after we'd do two tough drills back to back, then it was pressure free throws, then you get your drink. I really struggled. I was getting almost like itchy watching, you know, us just shoot free throws and there's so many kids standing around and all that sort of stuff, because I like everyone going and high reps and that sort of thing. But unfortunately, I don't think enough work is being done in their own time to become good free throw shooters and help us win that three-point battle. So we have to put segments into our session to get that done. And also it is hard if they're shooting on their own to replicate that kind of pressure too. So Jen at one stage put them all on the baseline and said, who's going to make a free throw? You make it, we get a drink. You miss, we run. And I was really proud of the girls that stepped up and said, yeah, I'll do it. So that was good. But yeah, there was a lot of missed free throws. And so, yeah, it's something we do need to and I know we sit on this pod and we talk about all the things we need to work on, and there's probably coaches sitting at home going, I've got 45 minutes and a half court. Like, what do you want from me? But yeah, it's one of those things we do need to prioritize.
How do you replicate that pressure? Like, you spoke about what Jenna did with, like, put them on the baseline. Like, is there any other way? Like, how do you elicit care, I suppose, from a player at a training session that walks the line?
Well, I know when I was growing up, if I was in my backyard, like, I'd be talking in my head, there's 2 seconds left, I'm down by one, I got to make this. So as much as it is all sort of talk in your head, it can still replicate that. You can work on that by yourself at home. And then I think similar to what we were doing, like, put everyone on the baseline, who's brave enough to step up and make this free throw so everyone can go get a drink. So there's lots of different ways. And I think as much as you don't like players standing around not shooting, that pressure is building as they hear the numbers going up. So we're trying to make 10 in a row and there's a girl waiting and she's been waiting there for, you know, it gets to 6, it gets to 7, and then she's up next and she's like, yeah. Oh.
They start to do the count around, like, if they keep making it, I've got to make number 10. Like,
and that's building that pressure.
Yep, absolutely. And that is something that can easily be done at training sessions, I feel like. And it might just be as simple as you have your drill, whatever the drill might be. You have a winner's group and a not-so-successful group. Trying to stay away from losers. But it's one of those things where it's like, well, okay, to keep your winners, someone has to make a free throw from that group. Otherwise, you lose again.
Validate it.
Yeah, you have to. I think there's something in that. And the best we can, try and replicate what they're going to go through. Like, we don't want the first time they have to make a free throw that matters to be when it actually matters in a game situation. So always interesting to hear how camps went. So that was – you've got another camp – at some stage, NPP camp?
No, not booked in at this stage. So just back to sort of our regular scheduled programming. But it is something we'd like to be able to do more of because it was great to have them together.
Yep, absolutely. And so, coaches, if you are interested in getting involved in any of these programs, of course, just hit us up. Like, it's fantastic. Over the last couple of weeks, I think we've had half a dozen or so coaches say, hey, we've listened on the podcast. We have an interest in getting involved. I'll say only coach, but because this is how it was worded, I only coach an under 12 eights team, but I have an interest in getting involved. Come on down. Like, let us know when and where you can make it. We'll hook you into a session. Even if you just go and watch, run the clock, be a passer, almost be a stationary cone at times, like, depending on what the drill might be. Happy to get as many people involved in this as we want, as want to be involved, because we would love to have more coaches have access to all of this, see the better kids, work with better coaches. Great way to develop yourself as a coach.
Yeah, well, last night before our hub session, the girls' coaches, I got there about half an hour or 45 minutes early, and we ran a little whiteboard session about sort of our system of play and what we're looking at, because they want to run the same thing to help their athletes for when they come to camps. And and, you know, also help themselves of sort of breaking out of, like one of them said, like I've only ever ran system and, you know, I don't know anything else, so this frightens me. And I was like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, welcome that's to awesome. Coaching.
But, you know, and then they stayed and watched like the first half hour and we just went through how to break down each side of the offense and how you could run them as little drills, especially if you only have a half court and all that sort of stuff. And it was great. It was really beneficial. So, you know, those sort of things are things we want to do more of. And but we also need to know that people are going to turn up for it too. So please reach out and we can get those things sort of things organized.
Absolutely. All right. So onto the topic of the podcast this week. We're going underrated, overrated, or correctly rated, as it turns out. So
you're giving us a neutral.
I'm giving you a neutral.
You're giving us a bestie in coops.
I am. Just every now and again, you've got to give
you an
easy one.
Thanks for keeping it easy for me. Yeah, I know. My best part.
If you just go correctly all the way through, people just won't listen anymore. No, it's okay. So what we'll do is we'll throw out a topic or something like that, and you can just, you got probably 3 or so seconds to think about it. We don't want too much dead air, obviously, where you can just have a little bit of a think about, do I think it's under, over, or correctly rated? Obviously, we'll talk it out. In particular, if you disagree, they're always the fun ones. When you both agree, it's kind of boring, but you know, I can be devil's advocate on that if I have to be. So we'll go from there. First topic, point guards. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated. Zoe, we'll jump in with you first.
I think they are underrated. I think we get hung up with sometimes, you know, point guards having to be 6'2" and 6'3". And the smaller point guards get that are genuine point guards rather than a hybrid point guard, I think get pushed to the side a little too often. I think we've got some amazing smaller point guards coming through, but it's harder for them to get noticed or to progress because of their size. And I think ultimately skill set and IQ is the thing we should be looking at rather than in that position. Obviously, if you're talking, you know, fours and fives, yeah, you need some size. Like, you know, that's different. But in that position there, you know, I think your skill set and IQ comes first and then your size should come second.
Yep. Jenna, what about you?
Underrated. I was so lucky to play with so many great point guards growing up, and it just, the way your team runs, the shot selections that you get the ball right in the hands, ready to shoot. So I was very lucky with amazing point guards, Kathleen McLeod, Christy Harrower, Sue Bird when I was over in the WNBA. Some of my French teammates were terrific point guards. And as Zoe said, IQ, I value so highly. And I don't see that coming through with these combo guards. And so I think the point guard position is so underrated and we really need to value it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't think you realise how valuable point guards are until you don't have one.
Facts.
And yeah, then all of a sudden it's like, hey, we can't get a shot to save our lives, or we keep running the same set over and over with this same problem coming in.
Well, there's no reason for what we're running.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big one. Like, we're just going to run this offense because
First thing
that came to mind. And then the next time we're going to run this. And you know, whereas like you mentioned Christy Harrower, she was amazing at this of, we're running this offense to get to this action, to get this person this shot from this spot. Like every offense she ran, she, if you were to ask her, she would have the answer as to what she was. Now, obviously it doesn't always get achieved, but that's what she was trying to achieve. She was also amazing at, this worked, we're running it again. We're running it again. We're running it again until you stop it. And then she starts to make her adjustments. And it might not be we run something else. It'll be, now here comes our counter, you know, and that sort of thing. And the ability to get a group in together. And, you know, like she was in teams with, you know, like two of our greatest players of all time in Penny and Lauren. And she gets them in a group and says, we're running this. And they're like, okay, no worries. Like,
that, ability to be able to control momentum. Like,
yeah,
if the team is up and going, yeah, she's up and going. But if things are not going well and there's been a couple of turnovers or a couple of missed shots in a row, she'll put that ball under her arm, get everyone in spots, yeah, and we are doing this right now.
Absolutely.
So being able to really direct and being that coach on the court, I feel like is missing a little bit at the moment.
Yep. Yeah. So I'll ask the follow-up then. How do we fix it in that space? Like, how do you create a good point guard in that space then?
$1 million question, right?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the BV salary, but yeah, it's
well, obviously from a skill set perspective, you know, you've got to train your ball handling, you've got to train your ability to pass, all the under pressure, all those sort of things. I think from a coaching perspective, we've got to put a little bit more trust into and also allow them to fail. So again, I go to VJBL games on a Friday night and I see the point guard get it. They look at their coach, the coach tells them what to run, and then they go and run it. We've got to sit back. We've got to see what they're doing. Let them sort of take the show a little bit and then ask questions of it. You know, what were you trying to get out of that? Why did you run that offense? You know, all those sort of things. Did you see the mismatch on so-and-so? And they say yes. So what can we run to get them the ball to exploit that mismatch and start really, you know, and again, and we say it a lot here, but it may cost you games. It may, you know, because ultimately if you can tell them, you can script every offense that they run, you're probably going to be a better working unit, especially when they're younger. But if we can get that kind of ownership into point guards, because a big part of it is ownership, a big part of it is them understanding that they have to run this team on the court while you run the team off the court, and get them comfortable giving direction and all those sort of things, and like all those things we said, having a reason for why they're running certain things and who they want to get open and what was their plan, I think is a really big, and it'd be hard. It's hard to let go of that control is probably more like you're handing the keys to a maybe 12-year-old, like, but yeah, it's how we get them better, and obviously the use of film too, and not
and I know it's always hard with film, right? But there's so much access right now. It doesn't have to be themselves, but watching the NBL, watching the WNBA, watching the WNBL, like that's all on KO. You know, there's access to it these days. It's on Channel 10 as well, I think, yep. The NBL. So that's a good way if you can get your team together and start talking about why they're making the decisions that they're making, really getting them to think a couple of passes or a couple of decision making in front of what's happening, just to get them start thinking about the game. Because I think a lot of the times they're coming to play, they're coming to training, and then they don't think about basketball again. Mm. And if you want to really get better and really go up the ranks in basketball, you really need to be watching. Mm. You need to see what's going to make you better, and I don't think that is necessarily happening right now.
Completely agree. I don't think we have students of the game anymore. You know, that's, we're actually talking about it, I think, just at camp over the weekend, how – like in under 12s, you'd play your game on a Friday night and then you'd sit there and you'd watch the 14 ones, the 16 ones and the 18 ones, because they were all one after another. And you're just sitting and watching and you're enjoying it, but you don't realise what you're taking in by doing that.
And being that sponge while you're watching it. I was saying, like, growing up playing for Nutterwing Spectres, I remember watching Sam Richards and Carly Wilson, who were a couple of age groups above me, and I used to love watching them and I wanted to be just like them. And so I was watching to see what they were doing, and then I was trying to implement it into my game. So I valued that time so much. And obviously having older brothers as well, I was just always in a basketball stadium.
But there's, if you are looking to try, and as a coach you are trying to put something like that in, there's that TED Ed program that we used during COVID, which is a really easy tool. You can put some video up and ask questions of it, and then you can see their question or their answers and things like that. You can make a multiple choice. You can make them, you know, just open answers or whatever. And that's a really easy way to get that done. So, it shouldn't feel like homework, but it might have to for a little bit until they start to realise, hey, how beneficial it can be for them.
And it doesn't have to be a lot, right? 10, 20 minutes before practice starts, have them come in, do a little hit, and then get out onto the court. If you do that, you know, every couple of weeks, it's going to start really getting into the girls' and boys' heads. Yep.
Definitely. And even the need to have different types of point guards. Like if you have two of the exact same type of point guard, that may cause you some problems, because it's not working for one, it's probably not going to work for the other that plays the same way. So even just having some more strings to the bow, the idea of a point guard isn't that you have to be the tuck it under the arm walk it up direct traffic. Sometimes you might be, for lack of a better term, the crazy point guard that just gets it and just pushes tempo straight away. And it's like, well, this is going to be the change of pace for our team.
He's a dog on defense, defends full court, gets that. In the lanes.
Well, and that's what we had. So when I was, when we were coaching Diamond Valley, we had that exact thing. You know, we had Bree Wattman, who was our sort of calm, cool, collected, getting the ball through hands, getting all that done. And then we're bringing Maddie Rocci off the bench, who's then changing tempo and changing pace. And we used her off the bench to, once the sting had come out of the game, for her to come in with the energy and the pace that she plays with to then exploit the fact that the game had slowed down. You know, so you 100%, if you can have point guards that complement each other rather than are all the same, I think it's really beneficial.
For sure. All right, we'll go the other end of the playing spectrum and we'll go height. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated. We'll go with you first, Jenna, on this one.
Oh, I think correctly rated.
Yep.
Obviously, it's basketball. You need height. So I think that for me is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's...
Oh, this is getting boring. Yeah. We're both agreeing on everything.
Actually, you know, I would... No. It is probably correctly rated. Bordering on overrated. Only in the women's game. Only because if we were to use Japan as an example, their size is they don't have the, you know, the 6'6", 6'7" sort of big, and they play into that. They play into what they're good at, and you know, they've been successful using that. Now, the only thing I think that's tough is I find it hard to sort of have it as the taller you are, the less skilled you have to be. You know, like, because you can skate through because of your size. That's the part I don't like about the rating of height. I'd like to see, you know, people being held to a skill set and obviously a different skill set, but held to a skill set standard regardless of their size.
Yep. Easier said than done. We need tools.
Exactly. Like our game discriminates. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
If you don't have rim protection,
100% discriminates. Yeah. Like, but... I think
it's not a free pass is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think
I think we also need to be kind that they can sometimes take a little bit longer to 100%. Understand what their body is capable of. They could have a massive growth spurt and they are literally all arms and legs. Yeah. So we do need to be patient with that and help with their skills as well.
Absolutely. But it's just that, I think sometimes, and if you're going to take a risk on anybody, you take a risk on a big, you're rarely taking a risk on someone smaller.
Yep, that's pretty accurate. Nailed that one. All right, Zoe, you're on first on this one. Coaching whiteboards. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated?
As in
using
a game?
One in a game.
I don't want to say correctly rated. So I'm trying to find a over or under. Actually, I think they're underrated, but because they are incorrectly used. So I think...
So not to throw them is...
Don't throw them, don't break them. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, and if you don't want to break them, don't use it to try and stand up if you've crouched down. Yeah, because sure. I've found that out the hard way.
You can find that on YouTube under Zoe Stacks It.
I need to Google that as soon as I get off this pod.
But I think sometimes we can get, so focused on the whiteboard and drawing up things, and we draw to here, we draw to here, we draw to here, and our athletes are on the bench and they're just trying to get air and get some water, and then where I think sometimes we draw too many actions on a whiteboard depending on age. So, you know, if we're in under 12s and you're drawing up an entire offense, that offense will not be successful. If you draw up a segment of the offense or, you know, something like that, then obviously that but if you can use your whiteboard clearly and correctly, I think it is actually underrated at this point. And it is also used, well, I know I used it as a focal point. So it was like, you know, you can get where they sit down and they take their drink and they sort of look around a little bit, or they're using it as their time to shut off. And it's like, hey, look here. And eyes go there, and now they're sort of focused back in. So, yeah, I think if we use it properly, I think it can be underrated. But if we're using it incorrectly, then it's completely overrated because it's not going to work.
Yep. Jenna, what about you?
I think depending on the age group, probably.
Yep.
I think in seniors, I think it is correctly rated. I think most coaches are probably using it to write their notes for halftime speeches or sort of ATO offenses, just a quick hitter coming out of timeouts. I think in the younger age groups, I don't think it's needed to be used very much. There might be, yeah, a quick focus on it. But, yeah, as Zoe said, if you're drawing up these complicated offenses, it's not going to happen at that age group. I think it's more just getting everyone together, giving them a quick breather, and they should know what they're going into. Yeah. When they get back on the
absolutely
court.
And it's interesting over the years. Like, I remember Trevor Gleeson when he was at Perth, like, he was very conscious of cameras in the timeout. So there would be times where he wouldn't talk. He'd literally just draw on the whiteboard and, okay, yeah, we're good. Usually ended up with the three for Bryce Cotton, to be completely fair. And why wouldn't you? But there are other coaches that don't use it and just talk their way through it because their players are able to visualise what they're talking about. It's like, hey, when we get to second side, remember that's a down screen into a back. Like, those types of things, depending on your personnel. You know, how long is a piece of string really on that one?
Well, and I think too, when we talk about the different learning types, I think if you're talking through it and you're drawing it so they can see it, like that hits your read write, but it also hits your visual, and you're talking through it, that hits your auditory. I think it is a good teaching point for them as well. And it's a skill too. Like they need to learn how to watch off a whiteboard and then execute. Like the amount of times you see a coach draws up a baseline out of bounds, but they've drawn it up on the wrong side of the basket where it's being entered. So then it's chaos, and it's that, then it's got to be that ability to be able to go, okay, well, it's the same thing, but it's just the other way. And those things, you have to go through those things so they can learn. You know, I mean, we had it at Worlds this year. We were told it was baseline out of bounds. We were in a timeout. The basketball was sitting on the baseline where it would be inbounded from, because that's what that means. And then we come out and they give us a side ball. And all the girls look at us like, what? Thankfully, we had another timeout in the tank. But if we didn't have that, we're going to have to then, you know, be screaming instruction to get that done, you know, really, really quickly. So those sort of things, I think you have to kind of go through to be able to learn the skill of reading the whiteboard and then implementing it on the floor.
I think at training, going through situations is a really key skill, for you as a coach to practice drawing it, and for the players to learn, this is what we're doing, we're going to go do it at training, rather than just get into a game, there's 10 seconds left or a point down, I'm drawing this up, they've never seen it before, and of course it's not going to get executed once they get on. So I think it's a skill that everyone can use.
All right, easy. We're going to talk junior basketball specifically here. Jenny, you're on first. Winning. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated?
Overrated.
Yep.
For juniors, it's about development. I know it's so hard, right? I think if your players are playing in the correct way, they are learning, they are developing, I think that's more important than what the wins and losses are. But also I think it's at the same time, I'm very much contradicting myself here. At the same time, it's important.
Be Switzerland.
It's important to learn what a win is and what a loss is, because that's life, right? We're going to have wins, we're going to have losses. So I think it's how the coach communicates that to their players.
Yep.
So I think we spoke about it at MPP camp. Just because out of a play we score doesn't mean it was done correctly. Doesn't mean because we miss it wasn't done correctly. If we have the correct spacing and we get a good shot but it happens to miss, that's still really well done. And as you were saying, shot selection, you could be shooting over three people, it's a terrible shot and it goes in. Well, no, that's not a good shot. So I think that communication and teaching your players what is a good shot, our decision making out of it, I think is more important than wins and losses in the junior landscape.
Yep. Zoe?
Completely agree. I think I come on here every week and talk about how overrated winning is. But
well, that's why you came to me first.
Yeah, yeah. Say, oh, we knew exactly what Zoe was going right. with. I could have almost just played an audio bite from a couple of weeks ago.
No, and I also am so understanding of how hard that is too, because as coaches, we want to win. Like, losing sucks. Like, I get it. But it's just something you got to stay the course, you know, and your wins as coaches, as junior coaches, your wins should be how many of your athletes come back, like particularly depending on the age group, come back next year. How many of your athletes progress through to a higher team in the next year or the next 2 years, or how many of your athletes, you know, make development programs or state teams or go on to play in senior basketball either at your club or beyond or get a college. Like, they're your wins.
Or you know, just play socially. Like, just keep them in the sport.
How many kids love the game? But when I say your wins, please don't then get on social media and say, this kid that I worked with, it's all because of me, because it's not. They've done the work. But they're the things that when I say they're your wins, they're the things you hold on to. They're what make you come back for the next season to work with the next crop of kids and, you know, have them help them progress through the pathway. Like, it's I can't remember who we had on the pod, but she had this great saying of, you know, when they enter our – it was about female coaches, but when they enter our pathway, you know, they're in the dark. They don't know what they're seeing, and it's our job to turn the light on. And it's really cool to be able to do that for a kid and then see them go through. And, like, my favorite thing, like the thing that really gives me a lot of joy is – when you hear them interviewed or you hear them, they write something or whatever and they're like, oh, I always remember, you know, when Zoe said this to me or, you know, something like that. It's like, oh, bless. Like, I don't even remember that. But, you know, it's really cool. And they're the things you want to try and hold on to.
Yeah, I think it was Dr. Julia Walsh.
That's who it was, yep.
Yep, who's fantastic in that coach education. And if not, I've just credited it with something. But
no,
she's got
it was
tons
definitely,
of those.
It was definitely her, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Zoe, you're on first here. Stats. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated?
Overrated, I'm going to say. Not that they're not helpful. They are helpful. But I think we can get bogged down into stats to a point where it clouds our decision making. So, you know, the biggest overrated statistic for mine is plus minus, because you can get some good things out of it.
This is where I meant to, like, cue up a little bit of a rant music for you, because I knew this was coming.
No, you can get some good things out of it. Don't get me wrong. Like, and you know, HoopsDB is a really good resource to be able to use, because, you know, when you start to get into things about, you know, your best offensive lineup and your best defensive lineup and the lineup you've played the most and you know, all those sort of things, that stuff I think is really helpful, because that can help you shape what you're doing in your decisions. Things like plus minus in a game, when you don't have those lineups of when certain players played with certain other players and who was on at the same time, like you might have rotated through and you've got predominantly bench on the floor and the other team has rotated through earlier and they've got their entire starting lineup on the floor. The plus minus of the bench players in that window, however long it is that ends up happening, is probably going to be pretty poor. If there are things in your game like junk minutes, that also affects your plus minus. So,
yeah, how many times do you say, oh, this player needs more of an opportunity? They were plus 12 in 3 minutes.
It's like, yeah, it's hey, like, just yeah, hold up. You're up 40. And yeah. I think they can be useful. Things like in-game being able to see, you know, offensive boards of the opposition, points off turnovers for yourself, and then points off turnovers and things like that. So you can really start to shape how you're going to address your group at, you know, halftime or whenever it is. You can then see things that might go missing in the throes of a game. you know, if I was coaching Jenna and she it's halftime and she's only had two shots, that's a problem. And so, but
give me the ball, coach.
Yeah, right. And now she's probably walking to the coach saying exactly
I've
that.
I've only had two shots.
But in case she's not, and sometimes in the throes of a game, you know, you can sort of get clouded and not see that sort of stuff. So in black and white, if you can see, hang on, our best scorer, our best shooter has had two shots. Now that helps shape how you're going to move into that next half. So I'm not saying they're not useful, but I think they are overrated and it can sometimes do more harm than good.
Yep. Jenna, what about you?
Overrated. An example I have is players who play for assists, they're only going to pass it if they know they're going to get an assist rather than just kicking the ball ahead. You know, are you making the right basketball decision or are you trying to get a stat? You might have six offensive rebounds because you've missed five layups. So as much as I think, as Zoe said, they can be useful, I think they can also skew things in not a good way. I value basketball IQ and making the correct basketball decisions regardless of stats. So yep. I think that's where I sit on things.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel personally attacked by that missed five layups.
Yeah.
I feel.
A bit of stat racking going on back in the onboarding days. That's all right. We'll move on to the next one. Jenna, we're starting with you on this one. And again, we'll talk specifically juniors on this, so we'll stay away from that sort of senior space. Strength and conditioning. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated?
Underrated.
Yep.
Particularly, I'm going to touch on the girls' side of things. We are predisposed to different injuries to males, in particular ACL injuries. So the sooner you can start doing some stuff to make your body sturdy and strong to try and prevent injuries, the better, because we have wider hips, then it goes in towards our knees, which is why we are more predisposed to get ACL injuries. So I just think it is so important. I know I hated doing weights, hated it,
yep.
But I knew how important it was for me to have a long basketball career. And I wish I had have started valuing it a lot earlier than what I did so that I wouldn't have had as many injuries throughout my career. I just think it's so important to get those stabilizing muscles strong. I don't mean going into the gym and getting PBs every day you're in there. It's about doing that maintenance work so that you can stay on the basketball court.
Yep.
And I know that strength and conditioning can be pricey, and I understand that you have to make sacrifices for certain things, but I think long term, if you can value strength and conditioning as soon as possible, you're going to be spending less money on physios, less money on surgeries later on. So I cannot stress enough how underrated strength and conditioning is, particularly on the girls' side.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, you talk about the cost involved, so to speak. The cost, if you don't invest in it, is probably higher. And I know like Joel Norton, that's done a little bit of work for BV and FIBA previously, youth-led, is his business, and he's put up like free workouts at home, no equipment, those types of things. And he presented on a webinar for us around strength and conditioning for a whole bunch of coaches from the Pacific Islands. And one of the questions was, hey, we don't have like squat racks and we have nothing in our country. What are we supposed to do? She's like, we train at a playground. He's like, great. Like, use the monkey bars for this. You can do pull-ups on that. Use this for, there are ways. Like, you can adapt it if you need to. You just got to think a little bit outside the box. Now, is it going to turn you into like Usain Bolt? Probably not. But there is something, you've got to find ways to adapt in that space. What about you, Zoe? What are you underrated or overrated?
Completely underrated.
Yep.
Like, it's everything Jenna said and more. Like, you got to, as an athlete, you've got to start and think of S&C as almost like prehab. Like, let's
look at it as an investment.
Yeah, we're preventing our injury before it happens. Like, if I'm going to get injured, let it be impact. Let it be that I've landed on someone's foot and I've rolled my ankle that you can't, you know,
yep.
But if you're, again, strong through your joints and things like that, then you're probably going to recover quicker and...
Or not be out as long to begin
exactly.
with.
Exactly. So, you know, it can, like, you talk about the cost of, you know, actual money, but it's also cost a lot of people careers. You know, it's ended... Like, things like injury, long-term injury, has ended people's careers. And that is just so sad to think about.
Well, I mean, Jenna mentioned it before, Sam Richards. Yeah. Like, imagine what her career could have been had she not had, like, knee after knee, like those types of things.
Yep.
Like, how much work, and I know Durham talks about it a lot from Core Advantage, obviously, and the amount of work he's done with her, and if he got a hold of her earlier and those types of things, it really is. It's an investment to your future, yeah, more than anything else.
And it can almost be, you know, if you are able to get into a program similar to that, to Core Advantage, you know, the things that they can find before they happen. You know, you land this way, you should be landing this way, and then they can work on that. You know, you're doing this because you have a strength deficiency throughout your glutes, for example. So now we're working on that. And, you know, it's just so important. And it is also important for once you stop playing as well, once you're done, if your body is, you know, as prepared for the impact that it is, like our sport is brutal on the body. I know everyone says, you know, AFL and all that sort of stuff, and that is, but our sport is brutal. We're running up and down hard surface, hitting each other, yeah, diving on loose, but like it's
not non-contact.
It's not non-contact. It's full on, and it's brutal on the body. If you can look after your body, particularly throughout your career, once you're done and you move on to your next phase of life, you're going to be better suited to be able to, I don't know, get out of bed in the morning and not look like the Evolution of Man poster, you know, like, which is what I look like in the morning, where I start really close to the ground and walk, and as I walk I get taller and taller and taller until I look like a human being. But those sort of things are really important, because there is also life after, and a lot of life after basketball. So you don't want to be, you know, having these, you know, major back issues, for example, when you move on to the next phase of your life and you have a family and you want to be, you know, playing with your kids, or, you know, those sort of, and you can't pick them up and you can't do that sort of stuff. You know, there's so much more as well on top of that, which is really hard. There's no point really trying to sell that to young athletes, because they can't really look past the next 2 months. But, you know, it is something that as you get, you know, into your 20s in particular, you probably really want to start and think about
it. Explain it like it's their prepaid credit on their phone. Like, just bank it up.
They don't know what that is.
No, they just live in a different world now. Yeah. Free Wi-Fi.
Free everything. Unlimited calls, don't pay for text messages. They'll never know the pain.
And I think our junior athletes, they're on the court so much. I would prefer them to take one of those on-court sessions off and do their strength and conditioning, because they'll be able to produce more when they do get on the court.
Yeah.
And as you Basketball Victoria website, there's heaps of resources from Core Advantage on there that can use, and you can do it at home programs and really start to work on that and develop it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's even more important, sorry, just last point on it, even more important because they're not getting that as young kids. There's not as much play as there used to be. You know, you think back when just even we were kids, we were outside.
Monkey bars, riding my bike on the weekend.
Riding bike, rollerblading, pretty cool at it too. Just going to throw that out there.
Skater or a blader?
Blader.
Yeah, well, hey, sorry.
Come on.
The look of hatred.
Come on. Like, but all those sort of things, and all those sort of base fitness things and strength that you were gaining doing that, we're not really getting that anymore.
Think how much better your ankles are after rollerblading, roller skating. Like, you build up a little bit of just strength.
Your core from riding, almost. From riding a bike. Yeah, you know, even just things like playing tiggy or tag or whatever you call it yourself. All those sort of things, you know, that's not really happening as much anymore.
We're inside playing video games or
right,
on the phone.
We're looking at our phone.
Yeah,
or
watching Netflix.
Yeah, the most we're probably getting is like choreographed dances for TikTok. That's about it. And that only goes for like 90 seconds. So it is something that I think now more than ever, strength and conditioning is so important, because that base isn't there. So they're going from so much lower to then when we increase the load, the gap is so much bigger. Whereas it used to be you'd start, you know, sort of medium, then the load comes on to high and that gap's not anywhere near as big, and they can handle it.
Easy done. All right, Zoe, we're back on you. Defenders. Like just you just straight out lockdown defender. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated.
Underrated. Completely underrated. I look at and I'm so glad that you know, she ended up playing for the Opals and having a really good career. But I look at Emily McInerney and how long it took her to sort of break through into those being a regular in those teams. And I remember playing against her and I hated it. I dreaded it, actually, knowing that, you know, I'm going to have to go 40 minutes and just, one, come out battered and bruised, but two, everything was so hard. Like it was so – so it was – but it took time for her to be able to break in and be that regular. And I think as we get further and further towards offensively minded basketball, we – you know, the kid that is the dog defender does get overlooked. And I think it's something we need to value. You know, if you were to ask me, would you want a better offensive team or a better defensive team? I'm going to say offensive team because I love watching offense. But if you can, you know, the things that defense can do for you is one, obviously slow down the offense of the other team. But two, it can generate offense for you as well. Whereas offense, good offense probably doesn't generate any defense for you, like in terms of better. The only thing it probably gives you is if you score, it gives you a bit more time to set up your D-trans. That's probably about it. Or predictable shots to get offensive rebounds and things like that. But from your defense, you know, I know there's been a lot of teams where our offense hasn't quite been clicking. And it's like, hey, let's tick the scoreboard over through our D until we find what's going to work for us offensively. So, yeah, I think more defenders, and more value on the kids that have put the time into becoming good defenders because it's tough.
Yep. What about you, Jenna?
I think correctly rated. Yeah. I think we talk a lot these days about 3-and-D. Like we want people who can play defense but also nail that three-point shot. So I think there has been that emphasis on filling out your squads and teams with that 3-and-D because there is that emphasis on D. And if you can't play defense, I believe you're going to be sitting. So I feel like it is correctly rated and
No, it makes sense. Like it's one of those things.
Yeah.
Because the hard part is. Yeah. Thankfully, the microphones are on stands here. Otherwise, she would have just thrown it across the room. But it's just out on the way through. But it is a hard one to quantify what makes a good defender, though. Like, is your team structure defensively better when they're on the court? Because that can be a very difficult one to see unless you're going back through film review or you maybe go the plus-minus type path with stats. But do they have to be that dogged defender that defends the 94 feet? Not necessarily. What if they're the big? Well, they can't do that, but they can influence and change shots at the rim depending on how it goes. Like, I remember, I think it was Dwight Howard got his Defensive Player of the Year award, and he's like, I'd like to thank all my point guards that allowed dribble penetration into the paint so I could block shots.
That allowed drive-bys.
Good job, Dwight. Like, it's
pretty funny.
Yeah, look, like, not completely inaccurate, but it is one of those things where you might not get noticed as the big because that's not the same type of defender that we all think about. And you know, it's very hard to quantify what is a good defender. And in particular, and you two would deal with it a fair bit, obviously, with selection camps and the like, how does the good defender stand out if they're just a good teammate that's always at the right place at the right time that changes shot, those types of things? It's very difficult. Like, it's not something where if someone sticks 4 threes in a row, you know, like, the whole gym knows when that's happened. It's difficult. I don't have an answer for it. I'm just
I think commentary. Good coaches can understand if a defensive player is always in the correct position and they're talking and communicating. I think that's a big part of defense. Boxing out and rebounding, finishing that defensive play. So I think it's you're going to notice you might be slower footed, but you're always in the right position, not getting, you know, just blown by, or you're pushing it to the help so that the rotation is on point. I think those things, personally, I think they're noticed, and maybe that's just because I look, I'm not sure.
No, yeah, I've got an athlete in my program that's, she's not very good defending the 94 feet.
I'm glad you qualified that. I was going to say, like, just not very good.
No, defending the 94 feet, but is elite in the half court. So is able to stay in front of the ball in the half court, off the ball is where she really shines. She's always in the right position. She can always read when to jump the lane, when not to. You know, she's always right where she needs to be. Like if we've got a lob that's come into a big, it's not catch, defender go. Like she's there. She's there on the catch, like every single time. So, yeah, I think there are different types of defenders and what makes a good defender. Like if I was coaching her in a game, we're not in full court matchup when she's on because that's not a strength of hers right now. We obviously still work on it, but that's not a strength of hers right now. But we would be in the half and letting her go to work. And again, that she helps generate offense through the way she defends.
Well, it's one of those things I think I've noticed over the years that I haven't always thought who my best defender is by they're going to play on that person. It's more a case of, geez, I never have to talk to them about defense. Like, it's not them on the bad closeout. It's not them on the late help. It's those types of things that you kind of just kind of get by, I suppose, in that space. Jenna, we're on to you first. The old halftime spray, underrated, overrated, correctly rated. Things might not be going overly well. Coach decides, yeah, I'm just going to let fly on this one.
Well, this is hard because I think if you're doing it every single game, then it's totally overrated. But I think if you're using it in the correct, at the correct time and it's few and far between, then I think it can be severely underrated. So I think it's how you're using those halftime sprays. If you've just got a coach that is just yelling constantly and then comes in at halftime and yells at you, I think totally overrated. It's just going to lose its meaning. But I think if it's a time when, they do need a little bit of a rocket, I think it can be, really well used. And
yeah, as long as it's not personal. Well, that's the big thing. Like, you
I
have
think
to
it's
motivate.
More about effort, right? Yeah, that's what it would be about. It's not you're coming in, you're not very good and pointing directly at a player. I would obviously
I feel
use
personally victimized as it was directly at me as
she
pointing at me.
Right, yeah, at you. Yeah.
Coops and Bestia back on next week.
Hey! But I think they can be used.
Yeah, the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Zoe?
Yeah, I completely agree. To me, a halftime spray should only be used because of effort, lack of effort. You know, if you're executing, it was similar to what Jenna said before, if you're executing and you're doing things well, but we're not finishing, yelling at somebody for not finishing is not going to fix finishing.
It'll probably make it worse.
It'll make it worse. Yeah, so there's a big part of just like, hey, just wipe it clean. First half's happened. What do we have to do to either get back into this game or, you know, push further out if we want to or all those sort of things? Be a bit more process driven. But if the effort's not there and you've been smart in how you use your sprays and it's not constant because otherwise you just become white noise, then sometimes it needs to be direct and it needs to be that it's not good enough. You know, I think an example when we were coaching Knox and we played the COE and you roll your eye, we all remember that game.
Roll there.
Ultimately, we didn't deserve to win that game. They played better than us.
They played better or they played harder?
Both.
Both.
We were just older. Like, to be honest, we were just older. Like, and yeah, that halftime spray they deserved because there was a real clear, we'll win it. We'll win it in the end. And
we'll flick the switch
soon.
We're fine.
Exactly. And one, really disrespectful. And two, you were nearly made to look like idiots. So that I think is needed. But there have been other times where we've walked into the room, we're down, but our execution's been great, we've followed the scout, all those sort of things. We're just not hitting shots. And, yeah, like I said before, there's no point yelling at somebody for missing shots. That's you can have a bit of a crack at shot selection, but not for make or miss.
Yep, excellent. Only got two to go. Zoe, you're on first this one. Attitude. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated.
I'd say a good attitude is underrated. Like, I think sometimes we get caught with kids that have great attitudes because they're low maintenance, And they're oxygen givers, like they make you want to coach them and things like that, you kind of forget what it's like to have the kid that has the bad attitude. So I think there needs to be value on attitude, and not just attitude of how they approach practice, how they approach games, but things like how do they approach taking care of their bodies, how do they treat their teammates, how do they treat even their family and their parents, and how do they respect the venue, and all those sort of things are really, really important. So I would say it's underrated because we don't realize just how good it is until we get the kid that or the adult, you know, that has that terrible attitude and makes it a grind for you.
Yeah, low maintenance is just such a blessing. Like, you just don't even realise it at the time. It's like, I never have to talk to this kid about that or this about that. They've always got that covered. They've always got, like, 3 drink bottles when they turn up for practice, so they're not, like, waving at mum and dad from across the court saying, hey, come and fill this up. Like, go fill your own damn drink bottle up. Like, it's those types of things. You don't realise it at the time until you don't have them.
And again, we often, as coaches, we are programmed to fix problems. And so the kid that's the problem, or the adult that's the problem, is the one we sort of hone in on and try and fix because we're fixers. And then the kid that, you know, is low maintenance or is, you know, doing all the right things may not get the same attention. Yeah. So, you know, I think, it's a tough answer, but to have to pick one, I'd say underrated.
Yep. Jenna, what about you?
If you don't have a good attitude, you're going to get found out pretty quick. I think in today's day and age, like, culture is spoken about so much, and cancers in a team can really trickle through and be really contagious, and no coach wants to deal with that. So if you don't have a good attitude, I think you'll be found out pretty quickly. And I think it's more you're building teams around, yes, good basketball players, but good people.
Yep.
You don't want to have people with bad attitudes around because it just...
It's hard. Like, it's just tiring. And I mean, we'll talk probably more about juniors in this space, is developing good habits more than anything else. Like, they have to be set on the right path early because it is something. And I mean, realistically, I think any time we go into team selection, probably the first 5 or 6 people will always pick themselves. Like, everyone could walk into a gym and say, that's your best 5 or 6. It's what makes up the rest of the roster. That's the sort of the caveat, I suppose, in a lot of places. And it's like, well, you might be super talented, but I know you're going to be a problem. So how many of those can you take? And I was talking to a coach not too long ago that's like, you know, we probably should have taken a chance on a couple of those kids that have probably a little bit scratchy attitudes, but we just kind of needed a little bit more fight than what we had from just the really nice kids that went along and did everything right. And it's like, well, okay, maybe there's a time and a place for both.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it is a thing too where you got to be a little bit careful that you can't have too many of them because that is just draining for everyone. But the right person in the right role can make such a massive difference. And if that's potentially someone that's maybe not going to get a lot of court time, a lot of shots, a lot of opportunities, being able to deal with that the right way can be such a massive win for your group that just makes everyone else happier.
Yeah, well, we had it just at Worlds. So it was down to the last 4 for the last 2 positions. I hope that makes sense. There were 4 athletes for the last 2 positions. And ultimately it came down to which kids are going to accept that role of 11 and 12, you know, be about the team, you know, be ready for if they get an opportunity, but also be understanding that there may not be an opportunity in some games. And that's why we went the way we went. So really it wasn't a skill set thing that separated those last positions. It was attitude. It was, and those athletes were amazing. Cannot fault them at all. They waved the towel harder than anybody else when they needed to. They gave 100% when, you know, they did step onto the floor and they were given their opportunity, like, kept the group together, you know, all that sort of stuff. They were phenomenal, and there's room for that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, last
one. Sorry, just one more point on that.
No, that's okay. You can cut me off anytime. That's fine.
I think that once you're labelled with having a bad attitude, that is very hard to change people's opinion. It can take a lot of time. But if you're labelled as having a good attitude, that will also last.
Yep.
So
kind of get a couple of free hits.
Yeah.
Like, it's out of character.
Yeah,
like
are you okay?
And I think, you know, coaches talk, parent, like kids, everyone talks, right? So as soon as that label is upon you, it's going to be really hard to get it off you. So be a good person, be a good teammate, have that good attitude, because I tell you what, once if you get that label, it's going to be stuck on your head for a long time.
I've only known one kid to change it in my time in this role. Yeah, only one.
Interesting. And it's amazing. We talk about it often in that you never know who's watching. The amount of times you walk into a gym and it's just like, who's that kid? It's like, why? It's like, they're either a very hard worker or they're not so hard a worker, and they're directing other people around, and it just you kind of get a little bit of a feel on some people. It's like, yeah, not a massive fan. And then you dig a little bit deeper and you find out it's like, oh, okay, this is a bit of a consistent theme throughout. And again, people talk. Mm-hmm. Like it's very easy for messages to get back in a lot of people in this space.
Yeah.
All right, last question. Underrated, overrated, correctly rated, getting a break. Jenna, you're on first. Like just having a little bit of a break and just sort of downtime.
Underrated. I think I said it earlier. The kids these days, they have so many requirements. And even if it's just one day a week, you are not doing anything. So, yeah, you're going to school or whatever, but you're not running up and down. People might play multiple sports, but I think it's so important to have that one day off, especially when you're young, to give rest to your muscles, to your bones, to your joints, and allow yourself to recover. I recommend it so much, and I know it's so hard, and that's where you're going to have to pick and choose and sacrifice some things, but rest is so damn important.
Yep, absolutely. Zoe?
Yeah, and completely underrated. You know, we saw when we came back from COVID, the jump in size from the athletes from like they, cause they had time to grow. They had time to recover and, you know, actually grow. I think we're stunting some of our kids from size that they could potentially be because they're turning their legs over all the time and their body's just trying to survive rather than thrive. So yeah, I think, you know, that one day off is really important. And, you know, again, just to reference him again, as Darren would say, you can still lift on that day. You know, you can still do your weights or, you know, it's your impact that you've got to take a day off from. And so if you're worried that you're sitting around doing nothing, then you can still do things, but just not running up and down, not, you know, being hit and all that sort of stuff that's putting pressure on your joints and your bones and your muscles, and, you know, just chill out a little bit. And then hopefully you'll actually see a real improvement in performance just by having that one day off a week.
And absolutely. I think we spoke about it on the weekend, Zoe, that these kids are doing so much that it almost feels like they're holding back because they know they've got another session that night or they've got to go hard again the next day.
Pacing.
So they're pacing themselves through every session rather than having some time off so that you can actually put full effort forward. Oh, I just hit the microphone, sorry.
That's okay.
Full effort forward.
That's staying in, by the way. We're not taking that out.
So, yeah, it's so underrated.
Yep. And I'll give it to you from a coaching perspective too. Get a break. Like it's, you know, we get it. You know, you don't have enough hours. You may coach two or three different teams. You might work in basketball. You might not work in basketball, and basketball's your outlet. That's fine too. But get a break for yourself as well. It is one of those things that when you're burnt out, your mood changes, your effort changes, all those, like your attention to detail changes. When you're just flat out all the time, you let some things slide and you're not giving the best version of yourself to give to the players in that space too. So every now and again, it might just be, hey, I just need a Tuesday night off practice. Is there any chance someone else can take it, or can we go out for a dinner or play mini golf, whatever the case may be. But just the ability to take a little bit of time for yourself in there, because I think as coaches, we do give a lot to a lot of people and we tend to forget families and those types of things that support us through our coaching. And just having a day where you don't have to think about it, where you don't have to deal with some drama that might be going on, or, you know, you just look after other people, a very valuable part of it. So please, coaches, do look after yourself and get a little bit of a break when you can. And I know that's, you know, easier said than done. I get it. But please do look after yourselves in that space too. That's it. we're done. Thank you both very much. Well done, Jenny. You got through the first one.
Thanks for having
almost
me.
Almost avoided all incidents until you headbutted the microphone a couple of minutes ago, but that's okay. We managed to get there. Coaches, once again, you can slide into the DMs of the @TalkingSplit handle on Instagram and Twitter. If you've got any questions or if there are any topics you want discussed, by all means, sing out and we'll try and get to those the best we possibly can. If you can like, share, retweet and subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating and review, 5 stars only, Jenna. That would always be appreciated to help pass the podcast around to as many coaches as possible. Thank you very much for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you all next week on the Talking Split Pod. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.